Heidi Xers, Phil Wayne here from MarketScope, a monthly taste of radio stations from various locales. Wherever broadcasting operations legally occur, primarily contributed by our most generous National Radio Club membership. For July, the first of two segments as we join Skip Dabblestein on a recent trip to Flagstaff, Arizona.
Thank you, Phil, and greetings everyone from sunny Phoenix. Recently, I had to spend a few days in Flagstaff on business and decided that while I was there, I'd put together a brief market scope of the stations serving that community. The radio market in Flagstaff has three stations on AM and eight on FM, not counting several repeaters. We begin the AM side of the dial with KVNA, the voice of Northern Arizona, on 600.
KVNA 600. All logged on to RadioFlagstaff.com.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Type RadioFlagstaff.com.
Where's the any key?
Then click on your favorite radio station.
That would be AM 600.
You'll find news, sports, weather, and all kinds of information.
New and improved.
I'm sorry for the delay.
It's packed with vitamins and loaded with interesting information.
Does this answer your question?
Oh, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yes, RadioFlagstaff.com.
Log on today.
Thank you very much.
So much happens all over the world just overnight, and you need a morning radio news show to put it all together for you. Hi, I'm Jim Bohannon, and I host America in the Morning, a morning program on KVNA that'll keep you in tune on events from all over the nation and the world. The sounds, the voices, and I bring it to you in a one-hour package that combines information, sports, market reports, and entertaining features. Listen to America in the Morning weekdays from 6 till 7 on AM 600 KVNA.
Welcome to Flagstaff Country, smack dab on the longest remaining stretch of America's Main Street, Route 66, where cool diners, nifty road stops, ancient Indian ruins, and natural wonders of the world, like a Grand Canyon, are a quick road trip away. West tradition meets modern-day culture in a vibrant and charming downtown, and where the best skiing and hiking in the state is found nestled in the pine-covered San Francisco peaks. This is Flagstaff, Arizona, Flagstaff Country, and from here, you can see everything.
I've seen everything.
Next is KAFF on 930 with classic country programming.
Country music is back to its roots on AM 930, CAF Country Classics. Country music is back to its roots on AM 930, CAF Country Classics.
That song is driving me crazy. I gotta hear it again.
In Northern Arizona, the pride of the country is AM 930 CAF Country Classics.
On one hand, I count the reasons I could stay with you.
AM 930 CAF Country Classics. Northern Arizona weather mostly cloudy tonight. Going to remain that way at least through Saturday. Later on in the afternoon, Saturday becoming mostly sunny. Continued breezy at times. Extended outlook Sunday through Tuesday. Nice. Warming trend approaching highs in the mid to upper 60s. Flagstaff, Lodi near 15. 54 are high tomorrow. Other lows tonight, Grand Canyon 17. Cottonwood and Verde Valley 33. Sedona same. And Winslow, low tonight near 18. Overcast skies and windy at AM 930, CAF Country Classics.
We conclude the AM dial with a TIS station operated by the Northern Arizona University at 1610 kilohertz.
This is the NAU Information Station, AM 1610, a public service of Northern Arizona University. You are welcome to visit Northern Arizona University's museums and art exhibits. and to attend the varied cultural performances and athletic events on campus. Metered parking is available across the campus, or you can get a parking permit and maps at the Parking Services Building, located on the north side of campus on DuPont Avenue, or at NAU Downtown, at the corner of Aspen and LaRue in historic downtown Flagstaff. Maps of the NAU campus are available at drive-up kiosks located at the several entrances to campus.
Thanks, Skip. Good to hear from you, and great job on another scope. If you're suffering from the underutilized cassette deck syndrome, why not do a market scope just like Skip did? Then send it along to me, Phil Wayne, 1872 Myers Road East, Marion, Ohio, 43302-9160. All the fine folks who enjoy these cassettes every month would be very grateful, as well as myself. It gives me something to do. See you next month with more Flagstaff Radio. Now, musings from the members.
Call the DX Audio Service Action Line at 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day.
This is Tim Hendel. After hearing Mark Durenberger talk about the water-cooled tubes at WCCO, I want to know if anyone out there can confirm the following rumor. I heard that back in the 60s and 70s, when WAPE, the ape, 50 kilowatts on 690 in Jacksonville, was a big rocker, they exchanged the heat in their water-cooled transmitter tubes by heating a big swimming pool on their property. Jacksonville is in the northern part of Florida, so it can get pretty chilly in January, but I'm told that if you had the right connections, you could get in there in January and swim in that pool, which was heated by the heat from the transmitter tubes. Does anyone know if that's true? Also, talking about the history of WCCO and how it has served the community and talking about immigrants and so forth, did WCCO during the 30s and 40s in that time ever broadcast in any foreign languages?
Hello, Fred. This is Ernie Holt from New York City. The person who asked the question about that idea of the station going from the city to the suburbs and the line of changing their city of license, is it possible that it has to do with the fact of what John Bowker told me about where the money is? Because Philadelphia did that in 1540 with WPGR. They went to something called Valley Kenwood instead of being in Philadelphia, because that's where the money is. WADO did it in New York City with AM 1280 against 1290, because the money went where all the people were. So the radio station seems to have followed that. So is it a possibility money makes the difference where you want to be represented by? I'd give that as an idea. The other thing I want to ask you is, why is it John Bowker doesn't do a marketscope of Tampa Bay, since he's home over there? Take care. Bye-bye.
Hello, Fred, and members of the audio service. This is the one and only Victor speaking to you from the Schmidt House in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. WCBM 680 in Baltimore is doing some kind of experiments, getting ready to go to 50,000 watts. When I've called the station, I am told that they are not allowed to give a date of when they are going to the full 50,000 watts, but I am receiving them a little bit better now in Silver Spring. The $64,000 question is, will I be able to get them at night at their reduced power at 25,000 watts? Wayne of Bradford, Ontario, I have a question for you, sir. I do a lot of DXing of Canadian stations, and I used to listen to a talk show host by the name of Lowell Green. I considered him the Rush Limbaugh of Canada. He came out of, I believe the call letters are CFRA 580 in Ottawa, and the only time I ever got to hear him was when he was simulcast on CKLW at night. Is Lowell Green still on the air?
Hey there, DXers. Josh Owens in Reidsville, North Carolina, on, Saturday, the 8th day of June. And it's about 11:05 at night. Just got finished listening to the June DX Audio Service Outstanding Magazine. As always, very professionally done, and I enjoy every column on it. Of course, my favorite columns are the AM Switch, Travelog, and Clear Channel columns, the thing from Mr. Durenberger. But I do have one question. I believe it was Mike Lance mentioned this on the musings. He mentioned Beasley Broadcasting getting rid of a lot of their outlets in the area there. Could that possibly be the same Beasley Broadcasting that used to own 102.1 WWMO in Reidsville back in the mid-80s?
Hello, fellow DXers. This is Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, I'm sorry to hear of some deaths like Jack Buck. I knew Jack very well and enjoyed his broadcasts. Wonderful fellow. and Art Roberts. I used to listen to him on WLS on Sunday nights in the mid-60s when he had Country Music USA, and it was a nice program. CFCO Chatham, Ontario, 630 on the dial, has been on the air 75 years this year, and I hear that WXYT in Detroit at 1270 may be going to 50,000 watts and building a new transmitter soon, and I surely hope so, because for all the sports that they have on, it would be a wonderful thing to have that station come up a whole lot better. Don't get them very well, such as it is.
Hello, Fred. This is John Bowker, and I'm just following up on the questions that Tim Hendel has raised, which I find fascinating. And perhaps I could have added one or two things to the comments I made a month or two ago about the cities of license and why a station might move from one city to another, particularly, as Tim points out, from a big city to a little city. And on the surface, it simply doesn't make sense. But if, I wonder if you remember about 7 or 8 years ago, I made a comment when WIMG at 1300 in Trenton, New Jersey, changed from Trenton to the little town of Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, in New Jersey. And the reason was that we did a field survey of our signal strength from WIMG's transmitter up at Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania, and we found we were not covering all of Trenton, New Jersey with the required power level. And so what we did was look and see, well, Ewing is a nice, wealthy community. I say that with all seriousness. Let's identify as Ewing, Trenton. And, of course, that made us all legal, because Ewing was right next to Washington Crossing, by the way. So that's one reason. In other words, a station finds that it's not operating and IDing legally. Another idea comes to mind, however, and that is the matter of ethnicity. There was a station in Valparaiso, Indiana, WNWI, whose call letters, by the way, stood for Northwest Indiana. But it found it was catering to a highly Polish audience. In fact, in town, it was almost dividing the town in parts as to what station you listened to. And that station has now moved to Illinois, where the Polish population moved almost en masse about 3 years ago. Very interesting migration. Now, it happens the city they moved to in Illinois is a much larger city than Valparaiso. But that was going to be their move regardless of size of city. They were catering to their ethnic audience. And there might be something of that. I don't know Waco, Texas ethnicity that well, I have to admit. But those are at least a couple of reasons. Someone else has asked about why did WDGY move from Minneapolis over to Hudson, Wisconsin, for heaven's sakes? So I asked Mark Durenberger that question, and he pointed out that that really was a false lead, that only the call letters moved. It was a station not up at 1130, but down in the 600s that had re-identified itself. So that doesn't check at all. Anyway, Tim and Fred, there are a couple of more things. Fred, I think you had it pegged pretty well, though. I'll bet you that their signal strength didn't reach all of Waco or whatever. Anyway, we'll try it again another time, and we hope to see everybody in Lima over the Labor Day weekend. So long for now.
You can't beat the music we play for you.
All
you can't beat
our
the music
is
we play
up
for you.
To date.
You can't beat the music we play for you. You
and information
you
is first rate.
You can't beat. Doo-doo-doo. Great guys, pop songs, the whole day long.
CFCO in Chatham.
Thanks, Chatham Cat, for your support over the last 75 years. Classic gold.
CFCO.
Science. Talking with Rick Lewis from Glendale, Arizona, about FM and TV DXing, which seems to be getting hot just about now. Rick, what's the bands been like out in your neck of the woods?
Well, as we do this in late May, things have actually started late, and just had my first TV opening with an ID, but things really ought to be getting into gear. Right around Memorial Day is when things start getting hot, and then, of course, they get even better usually in June and often in July and early August.
It seems like that medium wave DXing kind of peaks during the winter time, but FM TV DXing seems to start around like April or so. Is that generally true?
At least in the southern part of the United States, southern latitudes, it can start in April. Like I said, had a little bit of a late start. I've had TVDX, you know, intense stuff as early here in Phoenix as April 2nd. But usually right around the last week of April, things start to get into gear, and it does a few practice runs before really picking up in late May.
Well, is FM and TV DXing, is it kind of like AM DXing where you have openings to certain areas, or is it generally just from everywhere?
Well, yeah, there are openings to certain areas. In fact, it's one of the beauties of FM DXing is you never, and TV DXing, you're never really going to know where you're going to go. If when you get up that morning and you think about, well, gee, I hope I have some DX, well, you know, it could be to the northeast, it could be to the southwest, just depending on where the signals want to propagate from, and you just kind of have to be ready. And as you do this long enough, you know what to look for, and certain signs will get you to realize what area you're opening to, even if you don't have actual verification of it.
Well, when are the best times to look for DX on the FM and TV bands?
Well, it can happen any time, but it's more likely to happen in the, you might say, the hours between 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning and about 10 o'clock at night. Best around, I almost hesitate to say it like this, but best around the 10 to noon time and also in the late afternoon, early evening. But there are certainly plenty of exceptions. It could happen at 6 or 7 in the morning and be very intense. But what it needs is ionization, you know, of the E layer. And that happens more when you're dealing with sunlight. In northern latitudes, you have a lot more late-night DX as well. In the northern part of the United States, for example, when I lived in Oregon, it was not unusual to have an opening, say, to Minnesota start up at 11 o'clock or midnight Oregon time and move up the bands to FM. And, of course, that doesn't happen here in Arizona hardly ever.
Are there any indicators for, like, the type of weather? I seem to notice as a ham radio operator that a lot of times the propagation on the 2-meter band starts to enhance just prior to a thunderstorm rolling through the area. Is that true with the FM and TVDX as well?
Well, that's what's interesting. For a long time, people contended there was no relationship at all, and now I think more and more people are coming around to a relationship. But it's very hard to quantify it, because at least if we're talking about summertime sporadic EDX, which is typically in a distance from between 800 and 1,500 miles, 800 to 1,500, then how do you say there's weather involved when a lot of the theory says that the actual action takes place because of ionization right there in the midpoint between you and the DX, but often it doesn't seem to really work that way in real life. So it's a little bit mysterious as to exactly what the mechanics are that caused this thing to happen, but I've certainly noticed a seeming correlation with weather. A little bit hard to peg, though, because in summertime there just plain is more severe weather, especially in the United States.
Well, it seems to me like with AMDX, you're concentrating the energy coming out of the transmitting station up into the ionosphere, which is then bouncing down to the listener. With FM and TVDX, are we talking about something which is of a lower altitude, a ducting sort of, at 10,000 or 20,000 feet?
Well, that sort of thing can happen in what's called tropospheric ducting, which is a form of DX which is, I'd say, often between 100 and 400 or 500 miles, although it's known to be up to 2,000 miles, and that happens more with high-pressure systems and such when they settle over the, especially the eastern to midwestern part of the United States, a lot less on the west coast, although sometimes central valley fog can do it in California when you get a 300-mile high-pressure layer going in the winter months. But as far as sporadic E is concerned, that actually happens about, 50 to 100 miles up in the E layer of the ionosphere.
Now, is it generally just a single bounce, or is it several bounces within the ionosphere and the Earth?
Well, a single hop DX event is what normally happens, but of course, the double hop has been known, and I believe triple hop on occasion. But if you're going to get a single hop, again, you're looking at, on TV, between 500 and 15 or 1,600 miles. On FM, probably more likely to be 800 to 1,200, although I've had as little as 515 miles on FM, but that's not typical at all.
So sometimes the stations that are 200 or 300 miles out can actually go up over top of you, and you just won't hear them.
Oh, absolutely. Your event for DX will often be, say, something between, oh, using an example here, between Arizona and Minnesota. No, you won't be getting any stations in the midpoint at all. Just TV stations near Minnesota and Minnesota on FM, and maybe some of the surrounding states, but nothing closer to you.
Well, in your case, living down in Arizona, what kind of DX have you heard? And let me put you really on the spot and ask, what has been your most interesting station?
Well, actually, not as much interesting from Arizona as from when I was living in Bakersfield, California. But from here, I've gotten as close as Midland, Texas on TV, and as far away as Wisconsin on TV and FM. For Bakersfield, California, I did get Channel 2 in Dayton, Ohio, and I also, in 1980, got Channel 2 in Miami, Florida. In fact, at that time, they were time-sharing, and I heard one of the TV stations sign-offs and the other sign-on, which they did at 2 o'clock in the afternoon Miami time in those days.
Well, that's kind of neat. You know, one of my best catches I've ever had on TV, I remember seeing KTWO in Casper, Wyoming, which was just an absolute thrill. Is that kind of normal for the average TV DXer?
Well, it is, but it's still exciting, especially when you're doing it for the first time. Literally anything is exciting. I remember the very first sporadic E I got, if I can divert to that point for a moment. Was kind of shrouded in mystery and still is. When I was in Bakersfield, and I was actually examining FM for something totally different, not expecting this, I got a station in La Mesa, Texas, KPET. The fascinating thing is I've never found that station in any log. A few years later, at least, this was in 1968, a few years later, they had no FM. All I know of is an AM on 690, and I haven't even been able to substantiate an FM for that station. But there was one, at least for a few moments in time.
You know, with AM DXing, you listen to the signal, and it kind of has, it fades up and fades down, and sometimes you hear the skywave fade where it's phasing in and out. What does FM DX sound like if you were to try to describe it to somebody?
What I would say is that usually it's very clear, with a long, slow, deliberate fade. You might get, for example, 15 seconds of totally clear signal, and it might fade down somewhat into a little bit of white noise for maybe 10 seconds, very slowly, and then peak back up. Often, the stations sound as if they are equivalent to 40 or 50 miles away. So we're talking about really good signals here. That's the one difference between AM and FM. If you're going to get to, if you're in Illinois, for example, and you're going to get New York City, it's not going to sound local on AM. It'll sound good, but not local. On FM, it quite often will sound local, and it'll be in stereo.
So would you say that it can be a problem for somebody who does not have the trained ear of an FM DXer, that you might just think it's some station some 20, 30 miles away and not really realize it's DX?
Well, that's exactly it. And one of the DXer's best tools is knowledge, knowing what you would normally get on your dial in a given dial position. And when you find something unusual, investigating it and finding out exactly what it is. And, of course, you can use TVs and scanners as a preliminary tool to realize that DX is starting to come in, which, of course, narrows things down for you.
Now, one of the things that I've done on AM, I have what I call my AM beacon stations. I pick generally clear channel stations like Atlanta, Georgia, New York City, Chicago, and Detroit. And when I hear differences in their signal, that kind of tips me off to a possible AM opening from that particular area, or enhancement from a different area. Is that generally the same for FM as well?
In a way, although I would say frequencies more than stations. For example, here the best frequencies are 92.9, 95.1, and 95.3. Almost always when there's an opening, I get something on one of those frequencies. And if I really wanted to specialize in FM only and look for sporadic EDX, you know, having my radio on, especially 95.1 or 0.3, would probably tip me off to an opening, although it might have been in progress for a while. But usually sometime during the DX, I'll get something on one of those frequencies.
And why is that? Is that just a good frequency for it?
Clear frequencies where there are a lot of stations in the areas that I open to, just kind of coincidence, but it's also just the fact that those frequencies are available, and at least until the 95.1 comes on in my area, which is supposed to happen sometime in the next year, I have them available to me and I can use them.
So basically you just camp out on the frequency and listen for something which maybe sounds different or so.
You can do that. I use a different method, and that is that I have a scanner which monitors my vacant TV channels in audio pretty much at all times, and when there is a transmission on them, then that tells me there's something happening. I start to investigate it.
So basically like setting a scanner to channel 2, and when the noise rises up, you know that there's something there.
Exactly. In fact, one of the neat things about using a scanner, especially if we're talking audio only, it's not going to help with the video, folks, but with the audio, the nice thing about it, a lot of people don't realize that there are actually three audio channel 2s, channel 3s, channel 4s, channel 5, and of course 2 through 6 are below the FM range. So, for example, you can set scanner channels to 59.74, 59.75, and 59.76, and you might be getting three channel 2s at once. And as long as one of them isn't so clear that it overrides the others, you have three shots at getting DX. You can actually, for example, if you realize you have three channel 2s coming in, you can move from one to the other. As one is doing a commercial, you can move to another one for a promo, and you can move back and forth or put it in wideband and take your chances when you get them all at once.
So you can use that scanner in lieu of a TV receiver, more or less.
Absolutely. And you can also use it on the low bands to indicate some of the public service channels that are coming in. Now, they're used less and less frequently. The low band ones are in the U.S., but there still are some around, for example. 42.06 and .12 were used in Missouri and I think also in Connecticut. There's some of those things you can use, 44.70 in Oklahoma. They'll tip you off to openings, but like I said, not as much as once was, because in the old days, everybody had a 42 megahertz highway patrol, and now, of course, a lot of things are moving up to the higher bands. But there are still some tip-off frequencies that can help.
Well, then that kind of ties into something other than FM and TV DXing, and that is like scanner DXing. Do people DX the scanner bands as well?
Oh, sure, absolutely. A lot of times in the winter when the really long-haul skip is in, the F-layer propagation, which in this part of the sunspot cycle often moves up into 42, 44, and 45 megahertz, And you'll do a couple of thousand miles on the scanner, and certainly on from 33 to 39 megahertz, it's very common. In the wintertime, I'll hear Pennsylvania almost daily on 33 megahertz.
When those bands come up, so does the bottom half of the TV band most of the time, you'd say?
Well, for your e-skip, absolutely. When those bands come up, then the TV follows next in order of channel 2 through 6, whatever vacant channels you have and whatever happens to be in your E area. It's certainly possible to open to an area without any VHF or where the vacant VHF channels you have won't really provide all that much for you. But most of the time, there will be activity on TV before the activity occurs on FM. It'll tip you off to the possibility that FM may open up soon.
We talked about channels 2 through 6 and the FM band. What about 7 through 13? I take it those are also DXable as well.
Well, it has been known to happen. DX has been logged up to 222 megahertz. I haven't been that lucky, I'm afraid. I have never gotten anything channel 7 or above. I keep waiting for it, but it has happened to other folks.
For that holy grail to appear in Arizona.
That is it.
And what about UHF? Does anyone DX the UHF TV band?
Well, for tropospheric DX, absolutely. You can, again, in your Midwest and East Coast, That's where the tropo starts. It actually starts from the UHF band and moves down. And there are plenty of active UHF DXers. Fernando Garcia in Mexico, for example, really has all sorts of tropo records as far as UHF is concerned. And he just gets amazing stuff. So do a lot of other people in the country, by the way.
I noticed that some of the ham radio operators that use 6 meters and 2 meters and, to some extent, UHF, sometimes will camp out next to a lake or something to get a little bit of enhancement. Does living near a waterway also help you on FM and TV DX?
Well, you know, I've never lived near one, but I wouldn't doubt that it does, but I honestly don't have experience in that area because I've always lived either in Oregon or in the desert. So there's not a lot of water around here in Phoenix, so I couldn't tell you very much.
A lot of Sargasso cactus, aren't there?
And the, I haven't noticed the cactus to help any.
Let me ask you about the receivers that you would use. You mentioned that you use a scanner. Do you have a model number or something of a scanner which could be used for low-band TV-DX?
Well, I actually use, and you basically want to get a scanner that will let you do narrow-band mode and will also get channels 2 through 6. Those are the important things. It has to have that 54 through 88 megahertz range on it. And I use the Radio Shack Pro 2004, which is a 1988 scanner, but there's still scanners being made with those bands and those modes on them, and that's really important to be able to go into narrowband. It's, the audio is muddier, but things will come in with a lot weaker signal and much better than you would get on a TV. You'll get audio on that scanner, even if you have a TV right next to it. You'll get audio on the scanner first and louder.
What about some of these radios like the GE Super Radio 3? Will they work for DXing?
GE Super Radio 3 will work great. The Super Radio 1 is even better if you happen to have one of those on hand, but the 3 works fine, especially if you have some clear frequencies in your area. If you can get a filter put into it, so much the better, because that'll get those frequencies narrowed up a little bit, so that if you have a local on 94.9, for example, you might stand a chance of getting DX on 94.7 or 95.1. Even so, they'll do you fine with even just the stock antenna that comes on the unit. You'll get plenty of DX if you have some frequencies available to do it.
So if you had the money and could afford a tower and a nice antenna system, that would be a plus, but you really don't need an elaborate setup for FM and TV DX, do you?
No, you don't. A lot of people use Yagis or log periodics, and they set up signal amplifiers, ahead of the receiver and do all that fancy stuff. And sure, it helps them. You get an antenna with a rotor, for example, you're going to be able to null out local signals and, phase them to where you won't get them. But on the other hand, you don't have to be that exotic. I've never used anything that fancy because I've just never had it, and I've gotten hundreds, if not over 1,000 radio stations on sporadic E. So it can be done without all that fancy stuff, but of course, whatever you can do to help yourself, go for it.
Switching over to TV for a moment, digital TV is starting to take hold in the United States. There's not that many stations on the air as of yet, but are these affecting DXers in their hobby of trying to DX distant signals?
Well, there is at least one, I think, more channels on VHF that, at least audio-wise, unless you have a digital TV set, you're just going to get snow on your video and really no significant audio. But fortunately, that hasn't taken hold enough to really mess up the hobby. And, of course, for all we know, it could really open up a new outlet for really, really superb signals if digital TV ever becomes really affordable. So far, the jury's still out, I think, on how it's going to affect the hobby. But it doesn't look like it's going to affect it as soon as a lot of people were predicting. That date of 2006 for mandatory digital TV is probably going to come and go. A lot's going to have to happen in 4 years if it's going to take hold.
I can believe that, too. The FM side also has to contend with IBOC, and I don't know if there's any stations out your way, but I know there's been significant talk on some of the email lists about IBOC having a tendency to cause interference to adjacent channels.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, and I haven't heard it firsthand, but a lot of people who have say that it trashes the adjacent channels quite a bit, and I'm kind of hoping that it's going to be delayed here, but this is a major market, and I doubt that I'm going to be that lucky.
Well, we hope to hear back from you if you can give us some input on that. It seems that everyone's going digital crazy for some reason when we have a perfectly good analog platform, which is delivering the product. That's just my two cents worth. But
I can't help but agree with you, Fred, because there really hasn't been any indication that people are clamoring to get rid of their radios and TVs and go digital. There's a lot of pressure for it, but I just don't see the really heavy demand in the marketplace for it. Besides the demand coming from the government and the manufacturers, I just don't think it's going to take hold anytime soon. And a lot of companies are investing a ton of money. I'm not sure how well they're going to be able to recoup that investment on the short term anyway.
Here in Lima, Ohio, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm the chief engineer and vice president of the TV station, the NBC outlet here. And in doing our surveys of digital TV, we find a lot of digital receivers out there, so-called digital receivers. I say that because you can connect in a VCR, you can connect in a DVD player and stuff, but there is no receiver that receives 8VSB. I have to believe that other than two other people who have the expensive prototype sets, and myself with my Hop Hog card, I think we're the only DTV viewers in Allen County.
We're talking expensive technology here, and we're talking about manufacturers who often like to cut corners. I'm not really sure the two can meet very well.
I don't think they will, because the fact is people enjoy the $300 to $1,000 TV sets, and for $1,000 they expect a very, very large picture. And when you put that into the digital realm, you're talking somewhere close to $8,000, which I don't know too many people are willing to shell out for that.
Well, one of the things that I think a lot of people forget about is that when TV first started out as a mass marketed item in the 40s and 50s, it was something new to a lot of people. There were thrills to be had with TV and color TV. This is a whole new dimension. And now it isn't a new dimension. People know what to expect from it. Are they going to pay, $2,000 or $3,000 to get a set to watch Oprah Winfrey in super good clarity, or are they just going to put up with what they have? And I think that really, There's going to have to be some sort of breakthrough in order to get people to spend the kind of money that digital TV costs now, or those costs are going to have to come down significantly. I don't see the cost coming down unless there's some volume coming from buyers.
It boils down to the fact that people who want to view a very high-definition, large picture are going to demand some content which makes that picture very attractive to them. Watching their local news anchor is not going to be that content.
No, you're going to see it from the sports enthusiast, I think, more than anybody else. But you're going to see it, if you see it at all, from people who just have a lot of money to spend and will make high demands, and I'm just not sure their demands are going to be met.
Are there any organizations that cater toward the FM and TV DXer the way the National Radio Club caters to AM DXers?
Well, the main one is the Worldwide TV FM DX Association, the WTFDA. And the neat thing about that is that you've got a lot of people who specialize in it, who live, eat, and breathe it, and they share information all the time about what conditions are in place. There's a mailing list that you can do on the computer, and you can get information in real time. You can find out, for example, the area you're opening to. You can find out somebody's opening to your area, maybe even before things happen for you. It's great.
And how would someone get in touch with the WTFDA?
Well, you can contact Michael Bugay at Worldwide TV FMDX Association, P.O. Box 501, and that's in Somersville, S-O-M-E-R-S-V-I-L-L-E, Connecticut, 06072. And you can email Mike, and that's a fast way to get it done, and his address is MBUGAJ, that's Mbugaj, M-B-U-G-A-J, at S, as in Sam, net.net. Mbugaj at snet.net. And you can even get a trial membership in the mailing list. You can pay $10 a year and be on the email list all year long and exchange all that information with folks. You get a trial membership for 60 days at no charge at all to find out how you like it and just get your feet wet a little bit and exchange info with the fellow DXers, see what's happening.
Does the WTFDA have a printed bulletin that people can look at?
They do indeed. It is the VHF-UHF Digest, the VUD, and it costs, for a membership to get that, it costs $24 a year.
The FMTV DXing, how popular would you say it is? Are there a good number of people that are in the hobby and would be members of the WTFDA and also on the email list?
Well, it's kind of a niche market. There are a lot of people who really don't know anything about it, or it would probably be a lot better known since it happens in a way unpredictably. A lot fewer people are attuned to it, but there are hundreds of people actively involved in it, and the exchange of information is constant, and quite interesting throughout the country and throughout the world.
Rick Lewis on the subject of TV and FM DXing. Rick, I'd like to thank you very much for talking with us here on the DX Audio Service.
Well, sure thing. My pleasure, Fred.
My daughter Connie found an interesting article in the Lima News last week. It's titled, Collector at Home with Hundreds of Radios. This article was written by Larry Gear of the Knight Ridder Newspapers. The Vietnam War veteran pulls the pin from a hand grenade in his hand, and those nearby step back. Boom, he laughs. See? It's a cigarette lighter. But it's more. Just like about everything in Ray Weaver's living room, it's a radio. The telephone has never received a call. The guitar has never been strummed. The football helmet never worn. The roulette wheel never spun. You can find your favorite station using the clock on the wall or by adjusting a pair of binoculars with which you are spying on the neighbors. If nature calls and you must leave for a moment, that's okay. The toilet paper holder is an AM/FM radio. I just love radio that looks like something else, Weaver, age 69, says. He has 825 of them in his Columbus condominium. Using a small studio he's put together in his bedroom, he has photographed each radio and recorded the pictures alphabetically in a computer file. His screensaver reads, The Novelty Radio Nut. And that's what I am, says Weaver, who served his country in the Navy, Air Force, and Army, retiring as a chief warrant officer before working for the Civil Service Commission at Fort Benning until 1987. Weaver, raised in Magnum, Oklahoma, is especially proud of a miniature microphone his daughter Sandy gave to him that reads, Make My Heart Sing. Weaver is also fond of some Raggedy Ann figures. They were Eileen's favorites, he says, of his wife of 41 years who died in 1998. There are shelves filled with antique models. There's also a Star Trek ship Enterprise. He has a brewery full of beer cans, including that once upon a time Georgia favorite, Billy Beer. Figurines such as John Wayne and Elvis Presley contain radios. He especially likes a model of a dollar bill. George Washington's mouth moves as the radio plays. Weaver has some adult-only models, which he keeps hidden away. Besides his daughter, his sons Ed and Ken and their families have for years contributed to the collection. It was an easy Christmas gift at first, he says. But now it's gotten more difficult because they can't keep track of what I have. All of the radios are transistor models, being no further back than the mid-1950s. Some are promotional items, which were never for sale in stores. He checks catalogs to find out what's available, but most of the radios he finds at flea markets and yard sales. He also trades with other collectors via the internet. So what does the owner of probably more radios than anyone in town listen to on the radio? Well, I really don't listen to radio, he says. I get bored with what's on.
960 Cable, K-A-B-L.
Well, DX Audio Service members, it looks like the big blue Buick is taking me back to Lima, Ohio. I'm just about done with my trip here, and I'd like to thank you for riding along on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Before we go, I'd like to remind our DX Audio Service members that many of you will be receiving a survey, and this is something I send out, just different times. I think we've done three of them in the past, and the survey is just to get a better idea of what you, the membership, like in our magazine, what you dislike, things that you'd like to see changed. Perhaps you have an idea for a new column, or maybe even would like to tell us a little bit about your hobbies so we can kind of direct the magazine in your favor. Your comments are always taken very seriously, so please take the time to fill out the survey and send it back to us at the DX Audio Service. Finally, I just like to say I hope that we have a good turnout at the National Radio Club DX Audio Service Convention here in Lima, Ohio. That's at the end of August over Labor Day weekend. Just a quick note, my philosophy with doing a convention is that a convention is more than just a get-together and a few seminars and things. It's more of a customer appreciation thing, and it's kind of a thank you to all the membership who have been so loyal to us over the years. So I do hope that if you have the opportunity and the funds to travel to Lima, Ohio this year, that you'll have a chance to attend the convention and meet with myself and John Bowker, Phil Wayne, all the guys here at the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. I think it's going to be a great time. Well, that's it. That's all. There is no more. I better pay attention to my driving, and we'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio. Well, let's see what's on the radio here.
Then my generation comes along, and we see some of that, but we also see people like my father get laid off.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Andy.
Park your car at Devonshire or Tecumseh Mall, and Transit Windsor will do the rest with the Casino Windsor Care.
Great clearance prices on 2002 Fords and Mercurys. And on the used car lot, a pair of loaded...